So in the time leading up to it, the event is basically like, how do you create what's called ambrosia, which is like a thing that you can give to Sims to stop them from dying. So I was like, cool, you know what? Let's make myself like play with my I've got a character I made, like a sim I'd made for when Paranormal came out, like dealing with the ghost stuff. So I'm like, let's play with that one, 'cause that character feels like they make the most sense. I designed them to be like a medium and to deal like do the paranormal investigator career, so cool, right? And you can make your house haunted. So the first house I had was haunted, and she was hooking up with the ghost that was that they had put in Paranormal to help with like, here's how to play Paranormal.
Okay.
But you can't actually like make him human or marry him or anything like that, whereas like a lot of ghosts you can. Said screw it, never mind, and I started hitting on the Grim. And Grim Reaper would come by, I'd be like, yo, like let's do things, and you know, had a relationship-ish going there, but I couldn't progress past a certain point. I don't know if you ever can. So I was like, screw it, done with that. And then I'm trying to find like a person in the game that like I can use as a spouse for them, because like right now they don't have that. And I want them to get into the parenting, because I've one of the things I've always wanted to do is raise a sim from baby to, you know, adult and get them like the perfect life, quote unquote.
Okay,
So I'm
yeah.
like, getting her built up to have like really good parenting skills, so when she has a kid, they can be raised to be like the best life, right? So right now she's hitting on Father Christmas right now to try and hook up with
Oh.
him and have a baby with Father Christmas.
That's a strange thing to do.
Yeah, well, again, this has been a bit of a strange life, you know?
Do you get elves? What
No,
kind of beings are produced by sexual congress with Father Christmas?
the children that come out actually have like a unique trait. Can't remember what
Christmassy?
it's Yeah, I can't remember what it's called, but like it gives them like some light powers of like they can do like an effect that looks like it's snow around them, and like they're just naturally cheerful and stuff like that.
You know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
I've heard of it, and I've seen the old BBC movie way back in the day when I was in school, but I couldn't stand the book, so I didn't read it really.
Middle of the fucking weird fantasy, alternate reality, whatever that Japanese word is, kind of story. Father Christmas fucking rolls in. You recall that?
No.
Fucking weird.
I wasn't a big fan of it. I didn't really like the book or the movie much, so I don't really remember it well. All I remember
Mother.
is like wartime England, and they were supposed to be being shipped out to the countryside to protect them from the bombs dropping on like London.
Yeah.
And there's an actual wardrobe, and it's never quite clear if it's a real other world or if the kids are just make believing.
Oh, I think it's pretty clear that it is another world.
Is it? Okay,
Yeah.
cool. I don't know.
Yeah, motherfucking Santa Claus is there.
Nice.
You know about the Bridge to Terabithia?
I love that book and that movie, and it is so painfully sad. And it's like the best thing that what's it, the kid's name? Josh Hutcherson, that he's ever done. It's I think the best film he ever made.
Yeah, PETA.
Yeah.
Does he like glue rocks to his face or something?
What does Peter glue rocks to his face?
Yeah, doesn't he have some scene where he comes like sliding out of like a cliff face and he's got like rocks and moss glued to his face?
Oh, you're talking about as PETA.
PETA, I'm talking about
Kind of.
PETA, the character, yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were talking. I thought you were talking about the kid in Bridge to Terabithia that
I
he played.
understand. I don't know.
In what I remember in Hunger Games, he paints himself to look like Riverbed, so he
Okay.
doesn't have it like glued to himself. He's used the mud and stuff around to help like camouflage himself, and
Okay.
he's laying the side of the river because
Oh yeah.
he
He looks
got
very
badly beat
blue.
up.
Okay.
Yeah, he basically, if I remember the timeline correctly, because I'm bad for this and bear with me, they had the Tracker Jackers, which are like hornets thing, and
Yeah.
he got stung by that and possibly in the cut, and the cut was infected, so he was like hanging out there kind of like waiting to die and or have someone help take care of him. And then she stumbled upon him there and like pulls him into the cave and then starts faking a romance with him. That again, even in the book, it felt like she wasn't sure if she was actually interested or not, like not initially, but like as it progressed. So it wasn't clear how much she was pretending and how much she actually was interested in him as the books proceeded.
Yeah, I think that Susan Collins?
That's the writer, yeah.
I think she's from Newtown. I could be wrong. Someone might have just told me that.
I don't know where she's from. It's not something I've ever looked into, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would only know because, yeah, because she's from this town.
Yeah, because you're from there. I get it. That's the same reason I know that Michael Cera's from
There you go.
Michael Cera's from like Brampton, Mississauga. It's because he's from an area that I grew up in, right? So
Do we
that's literally the only thing I know about him.
is Chaos going to join us for the
He
city
has a
on the
job.
edge of fr he has a job?
Yeah. The only reason he was
What?
able to join us the last time is he had booked the day off. Oh no, it was a holiday. Sorry, we had a holiday here.
Is he gonna deliver food to you?
He will, but he's waiting for me to give him the go ahead. Basically, I told him I'll let him know when we're done, when we are done recording, because we usually do the recording episode recording, right?
Oh, so.
So he's waiting on me to say, come on down for when we are done recording and we're actually watching the episode.
Well, why in that case, why don't you tell me some things about episode 28 in our viewing order, The City on the Edge of Forever?
Well, it is the highest rated episode of the original series, season one.
Cool.
I have yet to actually pull the data for the rest of the seasons, but
Right.
I have a gut feeling it's probably going to be one of the highest rated, period,
This is one of the
for
ones.
all of Star Trek. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a 9.2 on IMDb. It is, I feel like in a lot of ways, this is the quintessential Star Trek episode. Most people, I feel like when you talk to them about Star Trek, this is one of the few episodes that they're like, I know that one.
Yeah.
Like it's like this, and there's like Tribbles are the
Yeah.
two big ones that stand out in the original series for me, you know?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's a real accurate summation of what a lot of people think of that. I mean, those were the two episodes that I knew before we started doing this, you know? Like,
Yeah.
this one's got it all. It's got the moral dilemma, it's got visiting the era of the time, which all of the shows sort of did. This one does it. I think we've visited the 60s once or twice in this, and this is not the 60s.
No.
Anyway, I'm not sure if I'm really. Let's cancel that whole sentence. That was falling apart.
That's fine. But to put in context of to why this is such a special and an excellent episode, firstly, Joseph Pevney, who we've seen him do a few things, like he did Arena.
Okay.
He did the Gorn episode he was the director for. He directed Return of the Argonauts. He directed Taste of Armageddon.
Good
Like
episodes.
every single one that he's done, I think we generally have ranked him ranked the episode at about like an 8 or higher for both of us. So solid episode director person in general, like that way. And then Harlan Ellison is the writer, and Harlan Ellison is a very, very famous, very skilled writer within the sci-fi community. So him being an active participant is gonna like is also a big thing, right? Like it helped it be better. So yeah.
Yeah, is that did he write I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream?
I think so, and I'm now double checking that because that one keeps coming up, and I keep remembering, not remembering who wrote it, you know?
I think that's him. I
Yeah, it's him.
Awesome. Cool
Actually,
guy. Oh.
first published March 1967. This episode first aired April 6th, so that might have been an impact on him being chosen for this.
Oh, they might have been like, hey, this guy wrote a very
We
famous
saw
short
we read
story
this
that people,
really
yeah,
good,
really cool. Yeah. All
Yeah,
right.
no, so very, very famous writer within this world. So, yeah, it's gonna be a good episode. I know I like this episode as per always. I can't remember anything really about the episode itself, other than there's a bunch of time travel-y stuff. But like, it's a
Yes.
solid episode. Is this the one that they go back in time to the 60s where Spock's got to wear the stupid toque and they have to create the talking machine
He
to be able to
wears a
try and figure out
stupid
their way to
toque
the
and
future?
he builds a ridiculous machine in a hotel room.
Yeah, and this is the one where McCoy's got that chick he ends up falling for that dies by the car that he can't stop.
That's the moral dilemma.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah,
And
no, it's an excellent little.
McCoy is McCoy is in goblin mode this time. He's looking bad.
Yeah, well,
He's
he's thinking
dripping
with
with
his glands.
alcohol. Yes, he's thinking with his glands as he is known to do.
No, it's a really good episode. And if anyone, like, if I was introducing people to original Star Trek, it would be this and it would be Tribbles. I think I'd do Tribbles first for the lighthearted campiness of it. But this would be like the second episode I'd be forcing them to watch, you know?
Yeah, I
Yeah.
agree. Good.
Cool. Do
All right, let's take a look at it
you have
then.
any thoughts? I thought, okay, never mind.
Well, I guess not really. Yeah. It's the one
Awesome.
where they go back in time because McCoy has entered goblin mode, and if they save the woman, they break the timeline, so it's a big conundrum, and Spock builds some kind of radio device out of like cathode ray tubes and a bunch of weird shit in a hotel room.
Yep.
Classic.
Very classic Trek.
And he wears a toque.
Always. The toque is so weird. Sorry, beanie.
That
For everyone who's not Canadian, I'm talking about a stupid little knit beanie. Oh, that word still feels weird. It's
let's watch it.
a toque. Yeah, let's go.
Hello, and welcome back to the Least Ready Room, a podcast about pot and Star Trek. Star Trek and pot, one of those orders. At least I got, should I start over? Am I already? A podcast about Star Trek about, hi. Today we're talking about City on the Edge of Forever. We're almost done with season one. I'm going to talk to everyone I podcast with about all the noises coming from their houses, and the person I'm going to be especially stern with is myself. I'm at a point where I can almost tell what kind of foods I'm eating while I'm fucking doing this. I think to a certain extent, a lot of times when I sit down and record that prelim, I kind of don't think it's actually going to be used, although that's not exactly true. Am I just kind of like, well, this is going to be the intro, it's a little bit throwaway, I'm just going to shove M&Ms into my mouth. Someone told me the other day they could tell I was specifically eating Twizzlers. I'm a disgustin'. Not even a G. I don't even deserve the G. I get an apostrophe. Anyway, today we're going to talk about the City on the Edge of Forever. We're going to talk to Chris, obviously. We are going to talk to Saint and Surreptitious Music. Maybe Weebs. This is a podcast where we talk to a whole variety of people, usually Toronto and Saint. Other people from time to time, often weebs. At some point in season two, I'll have an actual cast list. I'll figure out who's on the cast and who is a sometimes guest contributor. Thank you to everyone who specifically helps me make this podcast, and also anyone who happens to be listening to this right now. So, here's City on the Edge Forever. Let's start with Saint and Surreptitious Music, and one more episode in season one of this show, and there won't be. Any kind, there won't be too big of a break. I'm gonna try to maybe reconfigure some things and maybe change how I produce this and format some stuff. But season two is gonna be coming right along, which will mostly be season two of the original series, Star Trek. We're talking about Star Trek. Let's talk about Star Trek. Here we go.
I'm eating some soup.
You know about the city on the edge of forever?
Yeah, I've seen this one before. There's one particular happenstance in it that I think is like incredibly funny, and we will talk about it when it comes around.
Cool.
There's one detail in this episode that really amused me.
Are they in Texas or are they in like,
Isn't this the San Francisco one or
Oh, is
something?
that what it
Sure.
is? I knew it was sort of westish. Is Texas west? I mean, it's westish from here, I guess. It's not really. Is it considered the west? Is it the Midwest? It's the
Oh
South?
hell yeah.
It's the
The
Mid-South.
Texas is Texas is Texas.
Oh, right. Okay. That's correct.
If you ask the Texans how to get there, they say go west until you smell it and south until you step in it.
Ah. Oh, my.
It's its own dang region.
What kind of soup?
This is a leftover. I've been trying to get things out of the freezer that have been in there for a long time and I have a very nice. It was like I think this soup came from, we did like a little party last year, some friends and I, where I went to the Russian grocery and got like all the dankest Slavic foods ever.
Oh yeah. Cool.
And one thing was this really like smoky salami.
Oh wow.
And I basically diced it up and made like a kale soup with this really, really super tasty little salami and little tiny noodles and carrots and everything. And that's it. I'll have to make more soup soon.
I don't know why a lot of little tidbits of high school memories have been popping out of my mind, but do you recall singing a pop song called Hot for Yanni?
Oh, yeah. I may have a tape of that somewhere.
You said something about his Greek salami in there.
Yeah, and it's Armani. Give me a salami, Yanni. Hercules, Apollo, Aphrodite, and Zeus. Ulysses, Minerva, and the old spruce goose. Next to him, they all ain't no use because I'm hot for Yanni.
Wow.
I'm chill.
Laying down some lyrics.
That's right. I remember it to this day. One thing that happened in those days was I used to skip lunch every day to go to music theory class at Newtown High with Jack Zamory.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah.
And he showed us like some video. Like he got like a VHS tape in the mail from the Interlochen Arts like summer camp about their encounter with Yanni, how he came to Ohio to visit them.
Wow.
And we watched it while Zamory like totally mocked it the entire time.
That's great. Of course he did.
He just thought that was so dumb. And then I finished sophomore year, moved to Pennsylvania, went to another high school, and the band director had the same fucking video, and he showed it to us like dead seriously. Like, this is the coolest thing that has ever happened. And so I thought that guy was kind of a knob.
That piece of media has quite a legacy in your life.
Sure. Shit, man. I had to read Catcher in the Rye at two different high schools after I'd already read it on my own.
Oh, boy. Is that book about anything?
It's about a drunk teenager.
Okay.
It's like the most important book in the world.
Oh, that was my question. Do you think it's the most important book in the world?
No.
I recall this.
I'm going to say no to that. I'm gonna go get myself a beer and put this this mug for my soup in the sink.
That sounds so cool.
Oh come on!
I wish I could have a beer. I am. I will warn all of you. It looks like Pete is sending me links to join OnlyFans sites.
Oh really?
So he may be compromised.
Oh boy.
I'm going to send him a picture.
Put MFA on your accounts.
Maybe your Discord. Preka, I'm trying to type. Is compromised. Hi, Saint. How are you?
I'm all right.
Awesome. What do you think about the city on the edge of, is it tomorrow or forever?
The city on the edge of tomorrow is forever.
Of tomorrow is forever. Yeah. Do you like this one?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a while since I've seen this one.
Yeah, I feel like I should remember more of exactly what has to happen. Or, yeah, it's something where they have to let history proceed without intervening, is what they have to do.
They travel back in time and fuck up history.
Yeah.
They have to travel back in time again and figure out what the hell they did wrong. And okay. when they figure out what it was, it's a hard decision.
It's a hard choice to make. Yeah.
It's very sad. But the timeline, the sacred timeline must be preserved.
That is important.
I just watched Deadpool versus Wolverine.
Oh yeah, let's watch that tomorrow.
Earlier today.
Everyone's in it, huh?
Yeah, it's entertaining. I was going to say it's funny, but then I thought to myself, I'm like, is it even all that funny? It's fine.
Is it the standard Marvel? What is with, I can't. Oh my god. Were you so at least one of Weebs? You were here when the other cat was sitting on my notebook, right?
I gather it happens sometimes.
Anyway,
that is the thing that cats do.
Yeah, but like it's been like, I don't know. They've been doing it aggressively, I guess. And one of them was like not letting me take notes, and now
the other one.
Now another one is here. Like two paws on the left page, two paws on the right. Yeah.
Get them their own notebook.
I wonder what. Yeah, that maybe that's what I should. Yeah, I guess I. But then, it's also my whole desk now.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just kind of, but I guess it's just because it is aggressively happening all of a sudden and it's new. Like, this didn't happen. Anyway, shall we watch this episode of TV? Of classic television, gentlemen?
Yeah. Classic television. Until we run out of these and have to watch Batman.
That is on the table. Yeah. I would be willing to, once we move on to like, animated series and TNG, I would also do Batman at the same time to cover something from the 60s. But anyway, let's keep watching this for now.
Enough jibber jabber.
Yeah, enough jibber jabber. Thanks for being here.
Let me be your gateway.
Captain, the Enterprise is up there. They're asking if we want to beam up.
Get the hell out of here. Alan Ellison.
Whoa.
That's right. I forgot Harlan Ellis did an episode of Star Trek or two.
I think he did a couple.
Yeah, I think he's done a couple more too.
I met that dude. I met that guy 23 years ago on Sunday.
Yeah.
Was he a huge curmudgeon?
Oh, yeah. He was a total crank. And the reason why I met him was because my college girlfriend's dad was like best friends with him, and he was he's Peter David, who wrote the Incredible Hulk for years and years.
Oh yeah.
Dave, you remember my roommate Shana from those days when
I do,
we used
indeed,
to
be
in Dorchester? Yeah, that's Shana's dad, and him and Harlan and what's his face? Neil Gaiman did a talk at MIT one day, and we all went out to dinner first, and I met Harlan Ellison, and he was a jerk.
Oh, no.
Everything I've heard about him says that he's a huge asshole to everybody he meets.
This is a stupid question, right? Is that I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream?
Yes.
Is that him? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Unless this is a different Harlan Ellison in this
The Star Trek writer is different from, I don't
think. Oh, no, it's
I'll confirm
but
that.
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Him.
That's pretty cool. There's that thing, that passage from that story about how much the robot hates people is pretty cool.
he died in 2018.
He died about him, yeah.
Farewell to Harlan Ellison.
He wasn't that awful. He was just like an overbearing tough guy who never shut up. Just one of those kind of dudes.
Yeah.
Not like actually like super mean, but just kind of annoying.
People of that age sometimes have that personality type.
Yeah. He has some great stories, though. I definitely remember reading a lot of his short stories. And
Yeah, are there collections published? Is there anything you recommend offhand, or I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot about Harlan Ellison. I didn't even know.
Yeah. Trying to remember, all of the Harlan Ellison books I read belonged to my girlfriend back in college. Yeah, man. Deathbird Stories. That's a good one.
Okay.
I saw that pop up and I was like, oh yeah, that one's good too. But there, you could grab a lot of his Pain God and Other Delusions.
Oh wow, I like that title.
That's a name. That's a great name.
How did you guys like the scientific device that Spock whipped up in their hotel room? Tubes.
The vacuum tubes, and like, yeah, some electricity.
Tubes and platinum.
Stone knives.
Dope.
Stone knives.
Captain Everclire. Jacob's ladder.
Yeah, the Jacob's ladder, yeah. You saw that a lot.
They never made explicit whether they actually went and got some platinum or not. And no, that's a sad story.
I'm pretty sure they did not.
That's too bad.
He wasn't allowed to complete his experimenting.
No, he said you have to do this the hard way, Spock.
Right.
Can't get you any platinum.
So I guess that, like, I saw that episode maybe 20 or 30 years ago, a very long time ago, and I misremembered what I thought was the funniest line in it, which is that in my memory, Kirk came home with groceries and a sandwich for himself and a sandwich for Spock.
Okay.
And he was like, I got bologna on a hard roll for me and like salami on a Kaiser roll for you. And I always thought, remembering that way, I just thought it was hilarious that Kirk knew Spock's deli order.
Yeah, that is cute.
Yeah.
But Spock, unfortunately,
what kind of early 20th century processed meat would Spock want?
Yeah, like maybe they'd already been like that for sandwiches or something.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
It's a little piece of interpersonal lore, a little bit of character building. Spock likes salami.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's only one sandwich. You're the Greek salami. Give me that salami, Yanni.
I certainly liked the line where he told the police officer that Spock's head had been caught in a rice harvester as a child, and that luckily there was an American plastic surgeon nearby.
Yeah, saved his life.
Wow.
And
and gave him pointy Vulcan ears.
Gave him pointy ears, and the cop was like, okay, you can shut up now.
And they were like, all right, well, why don't we just knock this bozo out and leave him in the street?
Run for it while all those bystanders look at us.
Yeah, whenever Starfleet officers are doing a caper, any kind of theft, it's always cartoonish. And as someone pointed out, the music that always plays doesn't help. They're always running down the street to like...
You know, or like the Flight of the Bumblebees or some shit. Yeah.
They're always having a fucking caper. Yeah, this man, TOS really does have a unique and very special thing to it.
I'm looking at some footage of a rice harvester now, and I think this thing would probably just kill you.
Thank you for reporting
that
piece of information. I'm glad that we know that.
Yeah.
Well, our concern with the line was whether it was plausible, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this one was this is one of the most biggest, dramaticest, tragicest, humanist episodes.
Yeah.
Famously.
Sacrifice this woman who is a fucking saint.
Yeah, she's gonna bring peace to...
She inadvertently fucks everyone over in World War II so the Nazis win.
Yep, which goes to show you that the peacenicks will just fuck everything up.
Yeah. So because of that, she has to die in a automobile accident?
Yep. Because if she's alive, then she will tell FDR, stay the fuck out of World War II, and FDR will be like, yeah, I'll do that. And then he never sends aid to the Russians and the British, I suppose, and then the Germans and the Japanese finish doing all their shit, and there's no Pearl Harbor, and then the Germans get the atom bomb first.
And then they make flying to outer space illegal forever.
Then that, we can't have that.
No one ever wants it, tries for it, or accomplishes it ever. The end.
We make flying to outer space illegal.
I don't know. Maybe this is the origin story of the Terran Empire from the Mirror Universe. You know?
Canonical breaking point? We've talked about this before, and you were like, it's definitely in the past.
I do not know.
Because you said that Shakespeare was in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, but there was a specific thing I remember reading, but it was in a novel, so you consider it lower level of canon, like the novel level, like not TV level
of
canon.
I'm not sure. It might be. I may be thinking of the Orville, that I think there is a specific breakpoint for the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
But there is something that the Mirror, we'll get there, obviously, but the Mirror Universe is like there is a multiverse with many other versions of all these things happening. But then there's a specific mirror universe where Earth is bad.
Yeah.
One of
the parallel universe things that sticks with me from TNG is one where Worf is like accidentally falling through like multiple parallel universes over and over again.
Yeah, that's where the painting makes him dizzy.
Yeah, and eventually he ends up in some like highly advanced Enterprise with three warp nacelles. You can tell it's advanced because it's got three nacelles.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, wait. Are you sure? Is that not the final episode? We might be talking about two different things.
No, the final episode, they also have like a three
nacelle.
Okay. But they're standing on the bridge of that Enterprise, and like 100 other Enterprises are like popping out of into existence.
Oh, yes. And
they're all getting on a big conference call, and they're like, where is this Worf from? We need to get this Worf back to his own place.
Yeah, that's
and one of the ships is like, it's just Riker and Worf in command. You can see Worf running around in the background while everything's exploding on the Enterprise. He's like, "You can't send us back. We won't go back. The Borg have killed everybody in our universe."
Oh damn.
Yeah, and then they try to shoot at the other Enterprises, and they shoot back, and that Enterprise gets blown up.
I wonder if all of those universes have mirror universes.
I'm reading this plot synopsis for Parallels right now.
It's an infinite multiverse, so...
Is Parallels the Worf one?
Yep.
Yeah.
Dude, it's got a different color eyes, yeah.
He keeps recording a log of what place he came in like, the Batleth tourney, and it keeps being a different place, a position in the... How well he did. Wow, that was a...
Reading up on the German heavy water experiment, and apparently it was Norway.
The Germans in the late 1930s in 1940, they were running experiments on heavy water, which has deuterium, hydrogen with an extra neutron. But, you know, honestly, in real life history, everything they say about the German nuclear weapons program is that it was nowhere. They didn't put any money into it. They didn't put any effort into it because they thought, they're like, oh, this is like 20 years away. This is like 30 years away.
Never get this in time for what we're doing.
This is not going to help us right now. There's other stuff we can be doing right now. You know,
Kirk could have saved her.
Totally could have saved her. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this is a counterfactual universe. So
if the Guardian of Forever demands it, that's hard to argue with that guy. If he says the
sacrifice this lady to the donut.
I feel like all the good physicists were getting the hell out of Germany.
Is that what was going on?
No, that is a big part of it. And
yeah,
I remember even seeing some things that were like transcripts of German scientists who were captured or who went over to the United States after the war in like 1946 or whatever, and talking about like they were like, oh shit, like the Americans got so much farther in the atomic bomb than we thought was even possible.
Right.
Like, we had no idea that this was going to happen. Like, everybody, like, we all knew it was conceptually possible. We did not think that anybody was going to be this close to it. They were all kind of surprised. So, the Nazis didn't really work on their nuclear weapons program.
Good.
Slackers.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But there was also, they made some movie, too, about it, too. There was also a special forces, like attack in Norway on the heavy water plant. To blow it up, and that did help, you know, basically cripple any nascent research.
I do not know.
Yeah. I think it's nascent research into nuclear weapons in Germany.
Good job, Norway.
Typical lazy Nazis.
Typical.
Yeah. You couldn't be bothered. I heard a story recently about a physicist who, I think he was in Germany, and it might have been Niels Bohr, I'm not sure, but he had a Nobel Prize, so he had like a big honking gold medal.
And
he thought that they were going to come and take his Nobel Prize away, which, you know, probably would. So he took his gold medal and dissolved it in a bottle of acid until he had like gold acid suspension.
Yeah,
and just left it on the shelf for the entire war. And then the war was over and the Nazis were gone. He like precipitated all the gold out of it and sent it back to the Nobel Committee to be like, "Can you press my medal again?" And they did.
Wow!
Cool.
Wow!
I've heard that one. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why does that seem like some kind of Ferengi shit, like hiding your gold in some kind of liquid solution?
That is some shit that a Ferengi would appreciate for sure.
Yeah, Morin did that.
Morin did something like he took the latinum and put it in his stomach in liquid form. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I guess latinum, when it's not pressed, it is in a liquid form like mercury. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think I
understand. Probably non-toxic.
It's not toxic. Carry it in your second stomach.
Unlike mercury, yeah. No, I believe you're right. I believe latinum is liquid at room temperature, and that's why they press it in gold.
Sure, okay. Sorry?
It's cool that every species is okay with room temperature, by the way. It's nice that we all hang out in the same rooms.
No, but they're not. There are definitely There's the Sheliac.
Yeah.
The Tholians.
Yeah. But
you only see the Cardassians are still mostly at room temperature ish. They like it hotter. But not like 400 degrees Fahrenheit or something.
Right.
There's the guys that have to spray mist at their mouths.
The Benzites.
Benzites.
Yeah. No, that's true. You know, some races like it. Like, we like the temperature like 40 degrees C, and some are like, no, we like it at 20 degrees C. Yeah. But I'm talking about there are definitely a few alien races that are like, we like it at like 300 degrees C, you know, but then you only see those guys in like one episode and then you never talk to them again because they're a bunch of like space rock monsters and they don't care to talk to anybody else.
The Bree wear refrigeration suits.
Yeah, that's right.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Brains are... Trevor Goodchild's subjects in Aeon Flux.
Oh my god.
Green, and what's the other country called?
Monica.
Yeah.
Yep. I got the DVD box.
Yeah.
That's one of my all-time favorite TV shows. It's so good. It's just so freaking weird and ugly and gross a lot of the time and just confusing.
Do you like the part where they talk better or the part where they don't talk?
I like the talking ones. I think they're just awesome.
Man, I certainly have not seen them since the year 2000 at the very most recent.
Yeah.
Is that on any kind of streaming? Shit.
I have no idea. Let's find out.
Oh my god. Aeon Flux was rad as shit. I think I liked it when they didn't talk. Sorry.
I've got like some old MP4s of the non-talking shorts.
Yeah, they were cool.
Perhaps Paramount Plus. It could be a little body horror sometimes. Like a lot of things were going on. It was a lot of stuff thrown together. It looks like Paramount Plus might have it.
Oh man, I got Paramount Plus. Cool. Boy, yeah, weird shit.
Yeah. I recall reading that the dude responsible for it, whose name I forget right now, who created the show, was a Korean. I might have grown up in South Korea, so the whole theme of the border and the two ideologically divided states were taken from that experience.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think his name was like Chang or
Peter Chung, isn't
Peter
it?
Peter Chung. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do have the talking episodes.
Cool.
Yeah.
They don't have the shorts, I don't think.
Yeah, no shorts. Just the eight talking episodes, which is two more than Police Squad.
No, ten talking episodes.
Ten?
Yeah.
Oh, there we are, yeah. Which is four more than Police Squad.
How did you guys like Goblin McCoy?
He was horrifying.
Splotchy, yeah. Sweaty, splotchy.
McCoy.
Hopped up on space ketamine.
Space PCP McCoy. Yeah, the whole inciting incident is that they experience time ripples, knocks McCoy off his feet, injects himself with mysterious space drugs.
Yeah, yep. Lands on a hypo spray. Like, dude, to stop waving your syringes around when you're on. When you're on a ship going through time ripples.
There's not some kind of safety on that thing?
Yeah, there must be. There's gotta be. And again, it's like he's the doctor on a ship.
Yeah.
Like, they just flew through like 15 different ripples and had the ship shaking all the shit.
People are getting knocked around all over the place.
That's his fault. That's on him for not being careful.
This whole thing
is 100% Dr. McCoy's fault.
That poor girl.
He was not being careful. Why did he have like an entire syringe full of like 100 doses of it? First of all,
Second
of all, why is he just like waving it around when he knows that he's on a ship that's been like being smashed around by time ripples? Come on, McCoy.
Space turbulence.
Space. Very careless.
Very
space turbulence. You know, I often see on Star Trek people on the bridge sort of wagging around as though the whole ship were shaking.
Love to see it.
And they'll tilt like 10, 15 degrees left and right, back and forth. But I feel like I never see an exterior shot of a ship where it's just like waving back and forth 10 degrees.
Maybe in the 90s you might see that from now
on. In the 90s, yeah.
Maybe.
Not in this.
Yeah, not in TOS. Yeah.
We've had like in the entire first season about like two ship-to-ship battles.
Yeah, not too many. A few other things have knocked the Enterprise around, but and they really get into it in TOS. Like the actors really throw themselves around the bridge. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah,
it's so cool. Yeah. Bless them.
Bless them.
Definitely some eyeshadow on Sulu today. Did you notice that?
A lot of them. I think Kirk had some real, real smoky looking looks on him in certain lightings here. But yeah.
I definitely think they most of the time they're wearing stage makeup, eyeshadow, eyeliner,
eyeliner and such.
Some foundation and some blush.
I try to think of how you do that splotchy look on McCoy, and it kind of just looks like somebody just got like a big bucket of rouge or something and just stuck their thumb in it.
Get some splotches on this guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say use like one of those little makeup sponges and you just like splotch them all over his face.
Splotch him up.
Throw it at him.
Get some Vaseline, make him sweaty looking.
Oh yeah. Is that how you do it? Vaseline effect for that?
I'm sure.
No, off screen they spray him with a spritzer.
Spritzer.
Makes more sense.
For your face.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll need this when we shoot our monster movie that we're going to make for $15, a $15 monster movie.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. I would request the Vaseline and we'd go over budget. We're learning here. We're learning pro tips here. I was talking about this last night again. I really want to get some puppets and make a slimy monster movie.
I love the genre. Have you seen Attack of the Eye Creatures?
No, but I will write that down right away.
That's incredible. And one thing, it's probably 1965 or so.
Terrific.
And one of the things about Attack of the Eye Creatures was that it was initially released as The Eye Creatures.
Okay.
Then they wanted to put it out again and put it out back there on the drive-in circuit. So they just went to the title frames of it and added the text Attack of the, so that when you see the movie, the title comes up and it says Attack of the Eye Creatures.
Oh boy. Nice. That's perfect.
It's like, yeah, it's the perfect movie. It's incredible.
You know, Hell Comes to Frogtown?
No.
Wait, really? Do any of you know about that movie?
Nope.
It's got a wrestler in it, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh.
Is he in They Live?
Yes, he is.
All right. He was also in a movie called Hell Comes to Frogtown, where he is the last potent Whoa. Man on the planet. He's the last man capable of inseminating women.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know what that's like.
He's got to rescue some fertile women from a clan of frog people. And his name is Sam Hellman. Oh, but anyway, the reason I bring it up is that my favorite thing about this movie, I owned a copy of it, was that on the DVD, the first option on the menu was STRAT movie, Strat movie.
Strat movie?
Yes.
Somehow, a nomadic scavenger is recruited by the provincial government to serve as a human stud. They tracked him down by following a slayer of pregnant women left in his wake from his travels and had determined that he was one of few remaining fertile men in existence. A protective codpiece that monitors Hell's physiosexual condition is affixed to his groin and secured by an electronic lock.
Yep. Yeah. It's a good movie.
Fuck, this looks amazing.
Yeah. He has to fight a bunch of frog guys.
Whoa.
Sam Hell Comes to Frogtown. Yeah, thanks to all of you for watching Star Trek with me on this lovely Friday night.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Batman is definitely on the table. All kinds of other, yeah, stuff is on the table.
Yep. I've watched so far a spooky movie every night in October.
That's what I'm, I guess I'm watching a spooky night every night that I'm not watching Star Trek.
Yep. I saw The Brood by Cronenberg last night, which I'd never seen before.
Do you know what year-ish? Is that an early
79.
One? Yeah. How was it?
It was funny because it kind of mixed two really different genres together. Like part of it was like a psychodrama with this like apparently evil psychotherapist with this clinic who was keeping this woman away from her family while she he did this radical therapy. It just sort of turned on a dime into like a freaky evil troll monster movie.
Yeah,
which that was just sort of laid on top of the weird psychology content. So I was really into that.
I feel like I saw it in like the 90s.
It got super, it's got very, very gory, like intense, like in like two scenes at the end. And that was pretty much it. But it was very good. And the little monsters were really distressing.
Is it a small puppet movie like Gremlins or the gate? I think
most of the movie centers around the lady's daughter, who's this 5-year-old who keeps finding herself in incredible traumatic situations.
And the
monsters in the movie are like evil little child-sized tiny gremlin people.
Yeah.
So they're all like exactly as tall as this little girl who's the tormented protagonist. So it's really fucked up. Scary little munchkins.
And I get why I keep thinking McCoy's got a thing for her with the ending there.
He's thinking about it.
He's thinking about it, but he's not the one who's fully in love. He's just,
yeah.
You're interesting.
He's thinking with his glands.
He always is.
He's lit up.
I bet that was never an intention of Star Trek for everyone to just like be like, nah, man, he just thinks with his glands. Like that to be the notable thing about McCoy.
Well, I definitely never thought of that as part of his character when I was watching the movies as a child.
Yeah, for sure.
But I sure think it is part of his character watching the show when they were all a bit younger.
Yeah.
Excuse me, well, sorry. Please go ahead. What were you?
I was just going to say, like, overall good episode. Like, no complaints. It's a 10 out of 10, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
It's just a really good episode.
Just, yeah, speaking to that, a lot of things happen in it. I don't want to say in comparison to other episodes, but in comparison to some episodes, there really are a lot of ups and downs here. There's a lot of scenes that are actually impactful to the plot. There's a lot of things going on. I don't know if it's sort of the B plot of Spock building the thing in the room while they're waiting for McCoy hiding out in the past. There's just like, it's just thick. And mm-hmm. like, there's a lot to, God, and a man vaporizes himself. Like a lot of things happen. It's like a dense episode. Yeah. And it's a cool, tight little story because of that.
Like nothing's left out. They don't dilly dally. They don't dick around. Stuff's happening, and it's just constantly something. Like every scene matters, which isn't common with the show. Like there's usually a lot of filler stuff happening in episodes.
Yes, there you go. Every scene does matter.
Yeah.
What do you make of the thing that Spock builds in the room?
I think he could have just said it was a radio instead of telling her the truth, and that she would have been like, okay, cool, and moved on.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think the need to be honest was unnecessary. Also, it looked like they were trying to build a theremin and didn't know what a theremin was.
Yeah, I think a theremin may have been part of what was happening. Spock's asking Kirk to bring him back platinum and shit.
It was cool. It was very cool, but also really, really silly.
So some unusual readings have led us to a planet where there are like time quakes. There are ripples in time shaking the ship, which causes Sulu. The premise of this, the inciting incident of this episode is ridiculous.
It causes
Sulu to bump his head. McCoy comes to the bridge with a substance, an injectable drug we've never heard of before called Cortrazine, I think.
I don't remember if it was Cortrazine or Cortazine.
Something like that. Kirk mentions that it's tricky stuff. This 2 drops of this will save a man's life, but any more of it will drive him to the precipice of madness, space madness, Cortrazine madness. So after he cures, and this is the only thing, I guess, there's no triage. Like, Sulu gets knocked out.
Yeah, there's no tricorder, like, assessment or anything. It's just immediately, all right, he's been knocked out. Here's the solution. Moving on.
This is what happened. McCoy read on the internet that you can get knockout high if you inject yourself with, like, a ton of Cortrazine. And he wants to try it. So his excuse is he's going to bring the 2 drops to save. The first person that gets injured is Sulu. This is McCoy's plan. Then when the next bump shakes the ship, oops, the rest of the vial of Cortrazine has been injected into McCoy, and he is a complete goblin.
I'm now stoned on this thing that I really wanted to get stoned on. Oh, no.
Yes. So then that's the cold open. The credits roll. Oh, man, I got to stretch. I am like, the winter is creeping in.
You
want to
take a minute?
Not unless you do. I'm fine.
No, I just figured because you said you needed to stretch.
Yeah, I am doing it now.
Oh, okay.
but the winter is fucking creeping into my bones.
Yeah, it is winter. It is. They finally think that we've hit the break on the unseasonably warm we've been getting.
Yep.
That we're actually going to start like going into fall weather soon, as in like in the next few days.
So McCoy is rampaging around the ship. He knocks out a guy in the in the transporter room with some like judo chops. Like, does he distract him a little bit first? Does he like, does he say something like, look over there? And then he's like, whap, whap, with like two quick chops, one to the back of the neck, and the guy goes down.
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Well, McCoy knocks the guy out and teleports down to the planet where there's a big glowing donut. He goes to the big glowing donut ruins.
He does.
He's very splotchy.
It's human.
Yeah, is no, it that kind of day? Is that what we're doing here?
Apparently, that kind of day.
Oh my god, my spine. Yeah.
Oh. Wow. I'm sorry. That came out of nowhere.
No problem. That's fine.
But yeah, no, for sure. Like, he goes down to the planet. He sees the glowing donut. They have their readings of, oh no, this is clearly where the actual readings were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go about their business trying to sort that out. Meanwhile, a bunch of them end up just going into the machine because McCoy is changing history in real time.
Yeah, it's a weird method of time travel, right? That the machine can show you human history and fast forward, and you have to time your jump.
Yeah, for the right period.
That's kind of funny.
I mean, I like that it's a little bit different. I will give it that, because, like, a lot of time travel-y stuff, like, is very samey-samey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, kudos, but also, guys, quit being so goofy.
Spock explains that time flows like a river, and perhaps there are certain places that the eddies of time will always wash up debris into a certain point where, a crucial point in the timeline, which is where we are. In fact, when McCoy went back, he changed the timeline so much that the Enterprise is no longer there. Although Kirk and Spock and Uhura are there, and Scotty.
I think that's supposed to be they're protected by the quote-unquote chronotonic field of this device. That's why they didn't disappear.
This device, by the way, is called the Guardian of Forever and speaks to them.
It does. But yeah, that is my best guess, is that they're trying to play off of some kind of background, like, you know, they do it in other series too, right? Where, like, this person is protected because they're near something that emits a field.
Oh, sure.
That's similar to the thing that they're doing. So I'm just going to assume it's something in that, like, vein.
This episode certainly does not touch upon anything like that. They don't even speculate, like, why
are we here? Why would they explain anything and make it make sense? That's wasted time.
This was the first time anyone even thought about doing something weird in a story. So, you know, they can't explain everything.
Yeah, no, and they didn't have the time. Honestly, I don't think if they got into the explanation, it would have helped the episode.
Right, exactly. Right, and that's why this is a great episode. Because the things that are explained are the things that need to be to make the story work.
Yeah.
So Spock and Kirk are on a high-stakes time travel mission to 1930s Depression. Is it like Brooklyn? Are we in New York?
It feels like New York. I don't know if it is New York. I don't think they specified it.
I don't think anyone said it, but I'm not a bridge expert. I think I saw the Brooklyn Bridge.
It just feels like New York based on the architecture in general and just the way, like, they've got the food lines, the bread lines, right? Because it's supposed to be 1930s, right? And all of that just felt very New York. And then the cop felt New York-y.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, and I can't put my finger on what it was specifically, but it just had a New York vibe.
The first thing Spock and Kirk do is steal some clothes off of a fire escape, a very New York City looking fire escape, and then they assault a police officer with the Vulcan neck pinch, and also try to explain that Spock is Chinese and as a boy had his head stuck in a rice harvester and a white Christian plastic surgeon.
It didn't age well, okay? Our point is that it did not age well. The excuse that was given for why Spock doesn't look like a human.
It's incredible.
It's so casually racist.
As the scene is happening, it's getting worse and worse.
Oh, such casual racism.
Like, the Chinese boy with his head caught in the rice harvester, like, that's bad enough. And then, luckily, but, like, why a white Christian plastic surgeon? Specifically.
It was just bad.
Okay. Anyway.
It was weird and strange, and they got there, but why? Why did we need to do that? Yeah. It was weird.
They fall in with this lady running the soup kitchen mission place where they can stay and eat, and there's some other people who are down on their luck there as well, getting lectured by her, which is funny. And this is where they're allowed to stay, and Spock builds a computer out of a bunch of tubes, and it looks like... I always mention 30 Rock to you, and you're not familiar with it, right?
I haven't watched it yet, okay. No.
Yeah, you guys, at some point, like, you know what, like, at some point when you run out of, like, Grey's Anatomy or whatever, I'm serious, like, it's just put it on, have it on the TV, watch it.
My brain was like, no, at some point when we eventually finish all of the Star Trek, this podcast can become about 30 Rock.
I could sneak in, I could make you watch every episode that this show reminds me of.
I mean, I'd be down to watch it, don't get me wrong. I just, I don't know, I've got Grey's as a background, but I don't have a way to watch 30 Rock, I don't think, on any of my streaming services here.
Well, that, yeah.
Like some of that I'm paying for, you know?
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, it's on Apple TV, and it's on Crave.
Is it here for me right now?
Yeah, it's on Apple TV, and it's on Crave. I'm not paying for Apple TV, and Crave is $22 a month. So I'm just not paying. I've already talked to the sister-in-laws about Crave. I'm waiting for Righteous Gemstones season 4 and White Lotus season 3 to be released on there.
Yeah, did you watch Righteous Gemstones?
I did. I watched it as Walton Goggins.
Yeah. And the other guy, right?
Danny McBride, yeah.
Yeah, him, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of his. I watched it because of Walton Goggins and John Goodman.
John Goodman. Blah, 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 blah. I'm warming up to Danny McBride because of Vice Principals.
I still don't. He plays the same character in both shows, and I find him just.
Does he just do one character? Period.
He's the exact. Everything he's in, he's the exact same guy, and I don't. I personally don't tend to enjoy watching man children.
I saw him in Alien Covenant, and I have a feeling he may not have been cracking jokes, but he probably was the same guy.
I don't know. He might have been something different there. Even in a fucking
Alien movie. Maybe he might have. I'm not positive.
I don't know. I haven't seen that one. But, like, it's just, that's where my head's at with him, is he always plays the same thing, and I don't like man children in TV.
And that's what he's doing.
One of the reasons, and that's one of the reasons I can't stand Will Ferrell. Everyone thinks he's so funny. But I just, and Adam Sandler was the same for me, where it's like, they're just playing man children and still getting everything handed to them at the end, because happy resolution, but they haven't actually done anything worthwhile for it, and just feels gross.
I feel like there's a reason. I feel like there's one or two reasons that I once defended Adam Sandler, but I don't really feel.
I think
he's fine. Adam Sandler, I am completely neutral on.
I think they both would have been fine, well, all three of them really, if it was like a one and done or a once in a while thing. But
sure,
where it's,
but the oversaturation.
Like, well, yeah, because like, Happy Gilmore was funny. I'll give Adam Sandler that. Happy Gilmore was funny. And Billy Madison I enjoyed. But then, you know, he's still playing Billy Madison in Grown Ups.
Yep.
It's the same reason I keep complaining lately about Ryan Reynolds. Loved him in Deadpool 1. But by Deadpool 3, he's so oversaturated, I'm sick and tired of seeing him play Deadpool in everything.
Well, he's just playing Ryan Reynolds in everything, yeah.
He's playing Van Wilder. He got big on Van Wilder, so that's all he plays in everything, and I'm sick of it.
So Spock needs some platinum, and Spock and Kirk are, again, caught stealing. Spock is breaking into a lockbox at the fucking mission for the homeless. He's stealing their tools to build his weird fucking cathode ray tube computer science project. Oh, it reminds me of 30 Rock. I'm not positive if it's the one where Tracy Jordan is playing a scientist that is working on an engine that has been filled with farts. But at some point in 30 Rock, there's a lot of machinery and wires and mad science going on. But it might involve an engine filled with farts. So that's what Spock is building. And all this time, Kirk is building a relationship with Edith Keeler? Is her Edith Keeler? Yeah. Yep. And they're going out on dates. He likes her. She likes him. He's mysterious. She's trying to figure out what his relationship with Spock is.
And then Spock gets the tricorder to work just for 10 minutes. And he sees two versions of the past, which is weird. But it doesn't matter. It's for the plot. In one version, Edith Keeler is killed in an automobile accident. And the past unfolds as it should, and the Enterprise exists. In the other version, Edith is saved by a rampaging McCoy goblin. And
he's so weird in this episode. He really is.
Splotchy.
Just so weird.
Splotchy goblin man.
Like, almost looks like he's got jaundice with a rash.
Yes. Yes. Great makeup job.
Big old clammy jaundice rashy boy. Oh, so weird.
So when McCoy shows up, we gotta stop him from saving your girlfriend's life, Kirk. And so they all have to sit with this for a little while. They all have to live with this for a few days. At one point, Kirk grabs her so she doesn't fall down the stairs. And Spock scolds him. Spock says, "God damn it, Kirk. You better be ready to let her fucking die."
Yeah, no.
You gotta let her die. Much... Stop saving her from falling down the stairs.
She probably was supposed to die there, bud.
God damn it, Kirk.
How dare you be a good human being?
Yeah, Edith Keeler must die. Unbeknownst to them, so Bones finally shows up. One of the first things he does is attack a homeless man, somehow knock himself out, fall on the street. The homeless man takes, in an incredibly dark moment, takes McCoy's phaser, is trying to figure out what it is and what it does, is pressing buttons on it, and he vaporizes himself. Not really touching on any part of the plot or anything. We'll just put in this moment of a man accidentally vaporizing himself. But McCoy gets taken in by Edith Keeler, and she's taking care of him. And, I'm not sure exactly. Oh, yeah. He's talking about how he must be mad because this looks like not the 1930s. And she says, "You know, you sound like a friend of mine. Maybe you'd like to talk to him." And he says, "I'm a surgeon, not a psychiatrist." Moments before her death, Kirk and Edith kiss.
Yeah, he got his own personal resolution a little bit. Not as much as I'm sure he wanted, but at least there was some resolution in there where he kind of got a little bit of a sweet goodbye type thing, you know?
I guess that's nice. So I guess I don't really have to tell you that she ends up out in the street and McCoy is running to save her from the automobile that's going to run her down, and Kirk has to stand in between her and McCoy and not allow McCoy to save her, even though he loves her.
Yeah, and they get to share in that moment because, like, they're both gutted, you know, yes, for very similar and very different reasons, right? So, like, at least they've got each other, as awful as it is.
It's very sad.
It is. But well done.
Good job, guys.
And only a little bit goofy.
Good job, I have no mouth, but I'm a scream. Harlan Ellison.
Harlan Ellison.
What else is that? I should look up. I feel like I know a bunch of things that guy has done.
Harlan Ellison. But off the top of my head,
I do not.
I'm just trying to get.
I mean, maybe not. He might just be well known for I Have No Mouth. They made a video. Oh yeah, I watched Sean stream I Have No Mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a video game of it. I don't know if he ever finished it on stream. I think he finished it in general.
There are depictions of sexual assault in that game.
So he's won 8 Hugo Awards, shared award for the screenplay A Boy and His Dog, and...
Oh!
A Boy and His Dog was, that actually came up recently for me. What's it called? In Fallout TV show, Cooper Howard does a movie, one of his big ones. It's called The Man and His Dog.
Right.
And apparently that was inspired because of this Harlan Ellison one.
Yep.
And I feel like I've heard something. Part of the reason they did that nod to Harlan Ellison was because I think Todd Howard is a massive fan, and he used Ellison's works as a bit of an inspiration for some of Fallout.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah. A Boy and His Dog is an apocalyptic wasteland movie.
Yeah. So then there you go. That's what it was. I knew I'd heard about it recently in relation to Fallout. Yeah. No, he's done, holy shit, a lot of stuff. He's very prolific. That's going to be part of this. Is just he's very, very prolific. Novels and novellas. We've got Web of the City, The Man with Nine Lives, Spider Kiss, Doomsday, Boy and His Dog, Star Lost, All the Lies That Are in My Life, Run for the Stars, Mephisto and Onyx, Blood's a Rover. That are coming up. And then Blood apostrophe S space a space rover. Blood's a Rover.
Okay.
I don't know.
Blood's a Rover.
He also has like his short stories and collections, retrospectives and omnibuses, nonfiction. The man has written a bunch. I will say this though, at the very, you know, I'm doing a very light skim of this Wikipedia I'm not actually looking into any of this stuff. I want to make that very clear. But there's one that he put out in 1968 called Love Ain't Nothing But Sex Misspelled. And I have to admit that that is a really cool name for a story.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That was done in two. He did I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. And then he did From the Land of Fear. And then Love Ain't Nothing But Sex. So, yeah.
Good job, Harlan.
Very, very busy back in the 60s. Yep. Did a lot of stuff. So, mostly I think it's just the prolificness of his portfolio, you know?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he wrote... He's not Stephen King, but nobody is going to write the way that Stephen King does. Holy crap. I don't know how he pumps out books that much.
It still does.
I know.
It's still happening. Like, people, you can't even expect to read everything that he wrote in a single lifetime. How did
King
he write
has
it?
Published, King has published, because I Googled it, 65 novels / novellas, including 7 under the pen name Richard Bachman and 5 nonfiction books. He has written over 200 short stories, most of which have been compiled into book collections.
Incredible. Insane.
Yeah.
Monstrous.
So, he's not done. Like you said, he keeps going.
He's still going. He's got shit coming out right now.
Very impressive, but also, buddy, take a nap.
Yeah, take a break. You're doing all right.
Actually, Harlan Ellison lived a lot longer than I thought he did.
Oh, yeah? Into the 90s, or?
2018, he passed away.
Oh, holy shit. Man, oh my God. I would have said like 98. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, apparently he was born in 34. I always had it in my head that Harlan Ellison was, like, turn of the century to, like you said, like, the 80s or 90s, you know? I didn't think he was born later and died later than I thought. He just hit a different era than I had expected from him, you know?
Definitely associated with the 60s, but yeah, I had figured he had, passed around the end of the century.
Yeah, no, he was a contemporary of Roddenberry. They actually were contemporaries. Roddenberry was born in 21.
Okay.
So, they were actually, like, side by side kind of thing, you know, which is it's a surprise. Like you said, I thought I have him very clearly in the 60s, right? So
sure. Yeah.
Now, I don't have much else to say. Like I said, definite 10 out of 10 for me. This is one of the best episodes. Yeah.
It is a non-stop action-packed romp with I cannot get over the machine that Spock builds. It's an insane prop. There's cables all over the room.
It's so good.
It's like serial experiments lane.
But you know what? I love that they did it too, because like it really, it gets to show off Spock's abilities, which I don't feel like we show off his abilities in that respect very often.
Yeah, motherfucker whips up a computer, doesn't even have any platinum to work with.
We usually end up hearing him just spouting off information and being really good at like research and stuff. We don't see him be just actually good at stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A feat of engineering. Yeah.
Yeah, so I like that. I like I don't know. I liked, like you said, the way they built it. Like, it just looks really good for...
It's fun.
...what I would perceive as a potential, you know,
supercomputer in the hotel room?
Yeah, in the 30s. Like, what is actually potentially able, and how would one retrofit it with what was available at the time? Because, like, you know, there's going to be things like the lithium and shit that they, whatever, they just can't get, right?
Yep.
So how do you do that with, like, lesser equipments, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
No, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it's great.
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. Excellent episode. 10 out of 10. Would watch again.
10 out of 10. Love it.
Yeah.
Classic.
How did it go when you streamed it with everyone else?
I mean, everyone liked it. I don't recall what we all said.
Fair. I was just wondering.
Yeah, Surreptitious, I don't know if you have been like in the chat with Surreptitious Music, but he was there.
No, I've only seen him in your like chatting every once in a while in your Discord. Yeah. I've never actually been in a call with them.
Yeah, so we talked to, I think it was me, him, and Saint, and yeah, we always talk about the 60s. Now we wish it was the 60s.
Oh, yeah. All right.
But well, yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, have a great day. I'll talk to you real soon.
Cheers, man.
Peace. All right, thanks for listening to The Least Ready Room. We do a question of the week around here, and here's this week's. This question of the week was a funny one. It was, you travel back in time to save Harambe and therefore prevent the collapse of civilization. However, back in 2015 or whatever, Spock tells you that the brief era of peace that Harambe ushers in will soon collapse into a complete totalitarian hellscape run by, let's say, the Pepsi Corporation. Do you let Harambe die? Do you think we have free will, or is this bullshit on rails? Pete says, Harambe died so that we would grow stronger through the coming second half of the 2020s. If I could go back, I would not prevent his death, but immediately avenge him and provide falsified documents that Gwen Stefani was behind his death, so she would get canceled before she could slight Trump's ego and cause him to run for president. Two birds, one tape, and it was prophesied. I didn't know that about Gwen Stefani, but it turns out that's true. There's a whole YouTube video about it. The rise of Donald Trump is Gwen Stefani's fault. Okay. Raven says, no idea about free will, but yeah, Harambe would not want his life's work to be corrupted and misused by a soft drink corporation. Perhaps I could save some of his teachings for future generations when we are ready. Saint says, your sacrifice will be remembered, Harambe. Surreptitious Music says, not knowing if our current reality is bound to descend into Pepsi Hell makes it hard to answer this question. And, it does make it a little trickier. The guys on the Enterprise, you know, they knew that the Nazis would outlaw space travel forever. So next week is the final episode of season one, Project Operation Annihilate. And the question of the week is, what's your favorite season of Star Trek? It can be any series. Yeah, what's the best season and why? Mine might be season 6 of DS9. Worf and Jadzia. Jadzia's final missions. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. But yeah, you can answer that question on our Discord. You can get which is called Easy Town. You can get a link to it at koyadk.tv. Also, there are some other links to my other things and social media stuff. And I should update it. Although I don't know, it's not like I have anything new to put there. But I don't really know what I'm doing with a lot of my projects right now, I guess. I know I'm focusing on this one and the other podcasts. So anyway, go to koyadk.tv and look at it. And then go to lakehousesoaps.com and buy soap from me. And thank you for listening. We'll be here. Come talk to us on Discord. There will be a question of the week. All right, bye.